morning, Dave. How are you?
Terrific, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Doing really well and kicking around this Franzen thing a little bit. And I mean, remember 2 years ago, it's the Brandon Pruss of the world. Kind of that skill set was what was hot on July the 1st. And this year it was defenseman. I don't blame Cody Franzen for looking ahead to 11 months from now and having his mouth salivate a little bit at the prospects, considering what kind of deals we just saw getting handed out.
Well, it's interesting because we work within a framework, and sometimes when other teams choose to step outside the framework, which is certainly their prerogative, it affects the way you do things,
yeah,
you know, in arbitration or whatever. But, you know, I'll talk to Alex Anthopoulos about this in baseball, because baseball seems to do a better job of staying almost exactly with what they have with the collective bargaining agreement in terms of how long a team controls a player. And in our case, it's essentially 7 years. It's 3 years of entry level, and there's some variations to that. And it's over the period of the next 2 years, they gain arb rights depending on how many games they've played in the NHL. And then they have two more years of RFA, restricted free agency, with arb rights before they're an unrestricted free agent. And ironically, I was in the middle of a lot of this as a player in labor situations back to the mid-80s. In 86, we had one, and then there was a brief one in 90, and then again in 94, 95, when the real goal was to get a free agency down from 31 to 27. But what that mechanism has done now is it's essentially had teams tying everybody up before free agency, but it's a player's choice and a team's choice. In order, you know, Cody's managed his through 3 1-year contracts. That's his choice. He puts it on the line. He goes out and plays the next year, and he signs for a year again. You know, last year he chose not to go to arbitration. So it's really a case of how each side chooses to use the rules that are collectively bargained.
So there's a big conversation on Cody Franzen going forward, and salary is one thing, and then the secondary conversation is, what is he? And I think when you're looking at a blue line, everybody terms it differently. For myself, I say, well, he's a 5-6, he's a 3-4. You separate power play a little bit. For you guys, I don't know, maybe you factor in the amount of minutes you play. I'm not sure. How do you term it as a management group?
We've looked at our group of D, and as much as we like the individual D, we didn't think the mix was right, and that's why we've gone about making the changes that we have. And, you know, I'm one who talks a lot about a D partner. What, you know, having the right partners together. And, you know, I played with a guy, tragically since passed away, in Brad McCrimmon, who I considered one of the best partners in the game. And he played with, at various times, from Ray Bourque to Mark Howe to Chris Pronger to Gary Suter, you know, just and to a young Lidstrom in Detroit. So he was obviously a great partner. What we've looked at doing is maybe getting the partners in a better place. Call them 1 through 6, call them what we may. We have to have a better partners and playing better within their roles. So I don't think we tag a guy as a distinct number 6. You know, he's got to absorb so many minutes on the team. He's got to play a role, but it's got to be effective within the group of 6. And that's what we didn't have last year.
All that said, Dion Phaneuf is kind of been without a partner. A lot of people have felt that. Carl Gunnarsson did his best, but he was what he was, and now he's on his way out. Are you still looking for a Dion Phaneuf partner, or have you found that?
Well, we may have that, and that'll be up to the coaches to figure out, you know, essentially where Dion fits in and with whom. You know, we've added Roman Polak, we've added Stefan Robidon on the right side, and we've also got two blossoming young left shots in Morgan Riley and Jake Gardner. So now that the makeup has changed, it'll be up to the coaching staff to put them together in whatever configuration they see best.
Dave, when you look at your defensemen overall, then based on the way that you just, you know, kind of lined it out, it would seem like you feel like you have a strength there, you have depth there at that position. Is there a sense of perhaps using some of that depth or using a defenseman to perhaps in a trade improve other spots on your roster, and what might be some of those spots if you're looking to kind of project ahead? Are there still holes to fill and voids on your team?
Well, we've obviously made some significant changes, and there'll be as many as 6 to 8 new faces in the lineup next year, and so it may take a little time to figure out exactly where everybody fits. You know, Petri Kontiola is coming in from the KHL, Mike Santorelli is coming in, Leo Komarov is coming back. Matt Fratton is coming back. And so we've got some new faces up front, too, and how it all fits together. That'll be the game of, and once again, up to the coaches to put it together and see what the best fits are and see who pushes, you know, up from a young Marlies group. And Petter Granberg joined the group late last year and had a very, very good year with the Marlies. Stu Percy is a young man who, you know, will have an opportunity to play some games moving forward. And so we've got, once again, a different mix of players, and it's tough to sit here right now. I think everybody will, yes, we've got some arbitrations to go through as a group, but I think everybody will take a little bit of a breather now over the course of the next few weeks. We still have some teams that will have to do something because of salary cap configurations, although three of the teams that are technically over the cap today all have a long-term injury situation, a player in Philadelphia, a player in Boston, a player in Tampa Bay who has been on LTI over the past period of time, long-term injury. So it's not as drastic as it looks, but we believe there'll still be, as we move into the latter part of the summer, possibly early into next year, teams that'll be looking to make moves for salary cap reasons as well.
Dave Poulin, our guest on Brady and Walker. One more from me, and it's, I don't think we've talked to you since the re-signing of Peter Holland, and for the first time, it's a one-way deal. It's reminiscent a little bit of the Joel Colburn situation where, hey, you're on a one-way deal, earn your spot, otherwise we might have to lose you, and that's how it worked out. Describe the pressure now on Peter Holland to basically, in a sense, put up or shut up.
Well, I think it's a pressure he welcomes. And, you know, he took the challenge of going back down to the Marlies at the end of the NHL season. And that's not an easy thing to do, guys. It's not easy when you finish the year in the NHL to be asked to go down and play in the American Hockey League. And he absolutely welcomed the challenge. And Steve Spott sat down with him the very first day he was back and said, this can go one of two ways. You know, you can come down as an NHL player who's disappointed that he's finishing the year in the AHL because we're in the playoffs, or you can tear it up. And arguably, every night that we played, he was the best player on the ice on either team. And he welcomed the challenge, and he really took his game to another level again. He was a good player in the American League all year, but he was one of the best players in the American League through the playoffs, through a run that saw us go to the conference finals. So I think he's really, really motivated. He knows the opportunity's there, and then at some point it becomes up to the player to do it.